Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Peter Doob had learned that they had attended a passport office. Peter Doob obviously felt then my wife is going to leave me with his lover. They're obviously leaving the country together. That sparked the murderous rampage. He shot them openly in broad daylight in an apartment block and then went and shot his wife, shot her in the face. She amazingly survived. There was a manhunt straight away. Obviously, there was two survivors who could identify him.
I'm Nicola Tallant and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
Love Triangle murder accused Peter Doob is set to go on trial in Zimbabwe for a double murder and the attempted murder of his wife and her sister-in-law. 3 years after he first went on the run and hid out in Ireland posing as an asylum seeker, the full horrors of his crime will be played out in a courtroom. Today, I'm talking with Niall Donald about the accused, about his links to Ireland, and about false passports, documents, and identities. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com.
Niall, this was a story we meant to get on to before, and I don't know what happened. We never got around to it, but Peter Doob has been back in court. Or has certainly appeared in court at this stage. So we thought we'd have a little run through this story. It's interesting for loads of reasons.
Yeah, it's interesting for loads of reasons. Obviously, he was back in court this week, Peter Doob. It's been described as a love triangle murder. He was in court in Zimbabwe. Peter Doob is a car dealer who is accused of killing his wife's alleged lover, her best friend, and then shooting his wife and his wife's sister, his sister-in-law, in the face, who made a miraculous survival, actually.
The wife or the sister-in-law?
So both the wife and the sister-in-law survived.
Both of them. Yeah. So it's two murders and two attempted murders, basically.
That's what he's facing in the middle of Zimbabwe, which, you know, according to the papers, the level of crime in Zimbabwe is probably not of that type, is not that high, probably because the level of political violence is an awful lot higher, possibly. It happened in Harare, the capital city. I mean, there's an obvious reason why we're talking about this case on literally the other side of the world. It's because Peter Doob was arrested in a centre for asylum seekers in West Dublin last June. He had been living there under a fake name after going through a couple of fake identities, and he was kind of living openly. And you started getting these reports because some reporters in Zimbabwe had actually tracked them down. Maybe they had known people who knew him or whatever. And we started getting these reports. He had been arrested, obviously. He was arrested in June by the guards, not because they knew he was Peter. They probably had a suspicion that it was Peter Doob.
Yeah.
But he was actually arrested for possession of a fake passport or fake identity. So that, you know, they couldn't confirm, and they never did actually confirm it was Peter Doob or not Peter Doob.
Yeah.
So there was a big story went on about a guy who was wanted for this love triangle murder have been living in West Dublin, which is shocking. Like, let's be realistic. Nobody wants to see people like that ending up in Ireland.
Well, hiding in that system, the system for, you know, to facilitate it's asylum seekers who are claiming that they are, you know, they're looking for security in this country, for, you know, a suspected double killer, double attempted killer to be hiding out in that. He went on the run in 2021. So when did he arrive in Ireland, or how did he get in? We'll talk maybe a bit about false passports in a moment, and the ease with which they can be acquired all over the world. But how did he arrive, and what do you have any idea what he had, what story he had to tell when he arrived into our system?
Well, the basics of it were the murders were committed in April 2021. The four people that he shot, they'd all gone looking for a passport. He obviously presumed that she was leaving him and she was going to get away. So he shot all of these people, and it's obviously a huge story, as it would be here. And straight away, he disappeared into South Africa, which is the country next to Zimbabwe.
Sorry, do you mean that the police in Zimbabwe went looking for him and realized he had disappeared with a passport? Or what do you mean by that, they all went looking for a passport?
No, the four people that he shot.
Yeah.
So Peter Doob had learned that they had attended a passport office in Zimbabwe. Peter Doob obviously felt, then my wife is going to leave me with his lover. They're obviously leaving the country together. That sparked the murderous rampage. He shot them openly in broad daylight in an apartment block, and then went and shot his wife, shot her in the face. She amazingly survived. In the aftermath, there was a manhunt straight away. It wasn't one of those kind of carefully planned out murders where he hoped to get away with it. There was eyewitnesses. Obviously, there was two survivors who could identify him. So he disappeared across the border into South Africa.
Mm.
After that, he popped up in a country called Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland. It's a very small country next to South Africa, one of Africa's smallest countries. And while he was there, he changed his identity and applied for a passport in the name Sawil Mer Sally. That's
Swaziland is easier to say than Eswat.
It is, but we have to give the country the right.
We just get used to it, yeah.
Yeah, we have to give the country the right to call themselves what they want. But either way, then he left there and he arrived in seeking asylum in Ireland.
So he basically left the former Swaziland, now called Eswatini, and came directly to Ireland from there.
Well, I don't know exactly how he got there or how he got there directly, but he certainly landed and claimed and attempted to claim asylum. After, I think, his documents, look, we can only presume that Interpol put out a red notice for him. We can only presume there was interaction between the police forces internationally, and he was arrested by Gardaí in June. Even at that point, he still didn't admit to being Peter Doob. He claimed to be a Mozambique national who had been using this fake identity. He accepted, I think, that he had been using a fake identity. So he wasn't. He was ultimately deported, but he was deported to Mozambique because he was still claiming to be a Mozambique citizen, a citizen of Mozambique. After he was deported to Mozambique, he was ultimately again deported to Zimbabwe, where he was charged with murder last month.
His luck ran out as such.
His luck ran out. It was like, look, it's a very complicated story, obviously. But I mean, it does show, I suppose.
It's a complicated sort of way that he managed to keep on the run. You know, across the world, quite sophisticated thing to be able to do. And while, you know, we talk about false passports and false identities, which is an industry in itself within the criminal underworld. And it's not just people on the run for serious crimes like this. It's people who don't want to be traced around the world that use false passports. And there are industries that have sprang up everywhere. Here in Ireland, it was discovered that through investigations into the Kinahan network, that criminals were providing false passports by using the identities of dead people, but they were also purchasing identities from people who had maybe drug addiction problems, etc. And they were either stealing them or purchasing them. But nonetheless, they were able to facilitate passports in those names and dates of births. Like, there's many ways of getting these documents.
Yeah, I mean, there's a famous book. Is it a Frederick Forsyth book who sort of, I think it was, who detailed how you get a fake passport famously. And you know, what he described at the time was you go into a cemetery, you look for a child that's died within a year, the first year of their life. They have the date of death there. They have the name. They have the parent's name. You go in and get a birth cert. And then ultimately you use that birth cert to apply for a passport. It was all in this book. And it's not changed too much ever since. People still do it. Last year we had a case where what was described as an organized crime gang, basically of retired, sort of older criminals, were running doing that exact technique to get passports for organized crime gangs, including Christy Kinahan, but a range of other very serious criminals were using that technique, and using the technique of basically finding addicts who are never going to go anywhere, who have no plans to go abroad, and using their identity. And of course, that was the case with Daniel Kinahan. Again, even this week, there was an American guy has been jailed in Cork for using the exact same technique, which is the dead child's technique. Because obviously, if you get a birth cert of a dead child, that dead child is never going to have applied for a passport or any other identity. Yeah.
You'd like to think that in non-third world countries, that the passports themselves are quite sophisticated documents nowadays, and it's not quite as easy to take away the dead child one, which is still being used sometimes. But in other ways, to actually falsify the documents has to be harder these days to do, does it not? Is that my utter technological naivety?
Well, you're probably talking about the biometric passports, because you've been to the States, haven't you? And they have biometric data on them, which I actually don't have one myself, as far, because I haven't been to the States. So there are, the US certainly after September the 11th started to bring in more sophisticated passports, which including biometric data, which I think is scanning your eyes or various other things. They're not on most countries don't have that system. So whether that will come in, I think it probably will. Obviously, the issue for asylum seekers coming into the country is that a lot of them are coming in undocumented. They're saying they fled their country, which is the case often. They can't. If you're fleeing a war zone, you don't have the opportunity to go and get a passport before you go from the local passport office. So that complicates things. Certainly, Peter Dew became the fact that a wanted man with a crime of that status became a political issue in terms of being on the internet about immigration and all of that. And of course, there is a point that we should know who's coming in the country and be able to check people up.
But do you not have to apply for asylum status in the first country you reach? Like, you know, if you're passportless, I mean, there's hardly going to be too many flights direct from the former Swaziland to Ireland.
Yeah, like, I'm not an expert in that. Look, even this week, we've had Helen McEntee answering questions about how people are applying for asylum in Ireland after travelling through the UK down from the north, landing in Ireland and then applying. So there are, there's complicated situations. But look, this does highlight an issue
Well, I can totally understand how that happens, because people are being smuggled all the time, and some people will want to apply for asylum within the Irish system. But if you're flying without a passport, there's hardly very many places you can actually get through an airport without a passport. Perhaps if you're fleeing a war-torn or chaotic or a corrupt country, you can pay your way out of it and you can get on some flight to somewhere. But to where are you going to be flying to? I mean, the major sort of hubs Europe-wise would be Paris, London and Amsterdam.
Look, there is a reality that people, you know, destroy their documentation as they land in the place they want to be as well. I mean, that also is a reality. Look, immigration is obviously the number one political issue. It's not really necessarily a crime world issue, but there is a huge issue in Irish society. and how we handle people coming into the country, it will get more sophisticated and we'll have to get more sophisticated. Look, the vast majority of people are coming here are coming here for legitimate reasons. And once they land here, they have to prove their case about why they should be given asylum. It's not willy-nilly. We don't have an open borders situation where just because you land here, you're allowed to stay. In order to get asylum, you have to go through the legal system. But, you know, this is a case that highlights why, you know, it is important that people have to prove who they are and where they're coming from.
And also, you see quite sometimes in cases like this, you see that international policing cooperation, obviously, between Zimbabwe and Ireland and places that, you know, you see quite a bit of cooperation there, don't you, between those police forces. I mean, clearly there would have been some sort of a tip off coming presumably from Zimbabwe into the Irish system that this guy is not necessarily who he says he is. He could have a false passport. You know, the police don't just happen upon somebody with no information to check for a false passport. And that's really how Dube was first discovered to be in the system here. What I was going to ask you was, well, did he, you know, this was obviously a crime of some sort of passion. You know, he believed his wife was leaving him. You know, it seems to be something that was impulsive. Is there any suggestion that he committed anything, any crimes, violent crimes? I mean, it's a very violent crime, impulsive or not, to kill two people and attempt to kill two others. Was there any suggestion that he committed any crimes while here in Ireland?
No, there's no suggestion, I don't think. I think he was living in that centre in West Dublin. Lying low, didn't come to the attention. I mean, he was quite a respectable man, I think, in Zimbabwe before the crime was committed. He was a car dealer, ran a successful enough business. I mean, it was a crime of passion in that it seems to be driven by this jealousy. But there was, you know, even after he shot the first victim in the car, he still took the time to go up, find the other people, go up the stairs, go to the apartment, find the other people and shoot them as well. So it wasn't solely a moment of madness. Look, very, very violent crime. And it was a big news story in Zimbabwe, both when it happened and when he returned. There was like kind of chaotic scenes because he kind of got this perp walk, which looked really out of control as he landed in Zimbabwe, where photographers were photographing him and there was a sort of a crowd around him. He hasn't made a plea, but
yeah, we keep an eye on that trial because there might be details if he pleads not guilty and a trial goes ahead, there might be details about how he got here and the whole situation of Mandaron and maybe where that false passport came out of, and be interesting to keep an eye on it.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's getting big coverage in Zimbabwe, so we'll have no problem picking it up.
Cool. All right. Okay. Listen, talk to you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com, produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Clodagh Meaney. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.